indeed a dark prince.
I appreciate the warning, but Monsieur Saint-Germain and I are unlikely to spend time in each other's company, as I have no interest in having anything to do with him.
I wish he shared the sentiment.
Celine chose to ignore that comment. She glanced toward the gate, where Pippa gazed at her with an expression of undisguised curiosity. Arjun, meanwhile, shot daggers at Michael's back, then tilted his head at Celine in a spuriously light-hearted fashion.
I'd very much like to see you again, Celine, Michael announced as if he had something to prove.
Shocked to her core by this open admission, Celine nearly lost her footing. This fool, she wondered, believes I would afford him notice after he mocked me and harangued me about a murder for 2 days straight? Celine thought quickly, wondering what he hoped to achieve by making such a spectacle.
It couldn't be as simple as annoying Bastion, could it?
God save her from the pettiness of young men. Or perhaps...
I'd like that as well, Michael, Celine replied.
It would be smart to keep in Detective Grimaldi's good graces.
Not to mention that it would irritate her traitor of an attorney immensely.
Celine caught herself on the verge of grinning. Arjun had witnessed her chumming with Bastion's enemy. She'd bet anything the wily lawyer would be sure to add that particular detail to his collection of useless scribblings.
Bully for him, Celine thought with dark delight.
How she wished she could see Bastion's face when Arjun informed him of today's developments. It served them right. The next time, they would know better than to use Celine Rousseau as a pawn.
A murderess at Sunday Mass. Mon ami, I've discovered the perfect silk for my ball gown at a shop that imports fabric directly from China. It glows like a pearl and feels like water against the skin. I've already purchased boats and boats of it. I can't wait to show them to you when they arrive at Jacques later tonight. Bastion plans to meet this morning with the Monsignor. Look for me after Mass. I'll be the one with the devil. Bisous, Odette.
Celine read Odette's letter 3 times. Even upon multiple readings, its contents failed to sound any less ridiculous. Only a ruthless fiend like Bastion would attend Mass at the church near the Ursuline Convent a mere week after one of its residents perished in his establishment. And only a fearless creature like Odette would insist on accompanying him simply so she could speak with her new modiste about a gown for the masquerade ball. At the mere thought of Bastion, Celine harumphed. But Odette, as always, delighted her. Would the warring dualities within Celine ever cease? She sighed. As more time passed, it seemed increasingly unlikely. Celine stood naked in the center of her cell, cold dread coursing through her at the thought of what today would bring. Her skin was damp, the air around her perfumed by the lavender Castile soap she had used in her recent bath. It was a joy afforded her on rare occasions, this chance to bathe in the large copper tub shared by all the young women residing in the convent. Most evenings she was relegated to a bucket of cold water and a half ration of unscented soap. Breathing deeply of the soothing lavender fragrance, Celine donned a clean pair of drawers and laced the ties of her chemise below her collarbone. Then she secured the front of her stays across her midriff and made a face before pulling the ties tightly behind her until her waist appeared outlandishly small in comparison to her bust and hips. As always, it took a moment to regain her bearings after cinching herself into her corset. Celine fastened the white ribbons of her linen camisole over the whalebone stays. She turned in place to study the 3 garments strewn across her narrow rope bed, trying to decide which of her shabby gowns was the least shabby. She'd worn the blue dress to Mass last Sunday, which meant the striped one was her next best option. With an exaggerated sigh, Celine reached for the salmon-colored gown. She'd be hot in it, but it was the least rumpled and still held a trace of its former luster. Celine stepped into the cage of her crinolette and adjusted the bustle behind her. She knotted the strings of her best petticoat about her waist before jumping up and down to straighten the skirt over the narrow expanse of oval hoops. Finally, she tied the striped foundation skirt and its matching apron overskirt atop the linen petticoat before reaching for the coordinating bodice and beginning the arduous task of fastening all the tiny buttons up the front. When Celine was finished, she gazed down at her dress, wishing the convent had a mirror of any kind somewhere close by. A way to determine whether she looked as foolish as she felt. Celine supposed her gown appeared serviceable. When she had first made it more than a year ago, it was pretty and fashionable. Weeks in the sodden hold of a ship on a transatlantic crossing had altered the fabric irreparably. Celine sucked in her cheeks. It was fine. Serviceable was not terrible. And her appearance did not matter to God. So why should it matter to anyone else? Poppycock. Of course her appearance at Mass mattered. Celine couldn't very well march through the checkered nave of St. Louis Cathedral in nothing but her chemise and drawers. Though that would be a spectacle indeed, behaving so brazenly within such hallowed halls. It would likely have her banned from the convent. An idea that both terrified and intrigued her. No matter. Celine smoothed the front of her dress, the vibrant pink stripes flattening beneath her palms. It was scarcely 10 o'clock, but the day sweltered like a bathhouse in summertime. The thick heat of New Orleans never ceased to amaze her. This city in late January felt like Paris in July, if the streets of Paris had been drenched by the sea. Beside her foot lay the remnants of a small puddle, likely from where she'd unwound her damp hair before getting dressed. Absent-mindedly, Celine drew a symbol through the puddle with the tip of her booted toe. The same symbol that had been found beside Annabelle's body soon took shape along the stone floor. At once, Celine swiped her heel through it, banishing it from view. What would New Orleans feel like in July? Hell on earth? Celine winced. She guessed it would feel a lot like a murderess at Sunday Mass. Celine sat beside Pippa in an oak pew halfway down the right side of St. Louis Cathedral. A bead of sweat dripped down her neck. Makeshift fans fluttered alongside expensive contrivances of silk and lacquered wood. Faded whispers carried into the frescoed ceiling above. Heads began to droop even before the start of the homily, eyes falling shut an instant before the person was elbowed awake.
Merci. Celine murmured to Pippa. It's even hotter than last week. How are we to endure the summer months?
Pippa sat beside her in a gown of pale blue organza. Not too long ago it had been the height of fashion. Pains had been taken to maintain the delicate lace detailing, but several small tears could be seen along the sleeves. In some places it had been meticulously mended.
You look lovely. Celine whispered.
Pippa nudged her shoulder, good-naturedly.
I look like a soggy handkerchief next to you. That bright color is wonderful against your skin.
Celine tisked.
You shouldn't speak ill of my friend, especially not in a church.
Pippa smothered a grin. Behind the immense marble altar, the Monsignor moved into position to begin his homily, switching from Latin to English to properly address his congregation. Celine scanned the crowd until her gaze fell on a well-dressed pair positioned on the opposite side of the aisle. Bastien sat in a pew at the end of the first row, Odette beside him in a cream-colored gown of Duchess satin with a matching bonnet. Admittedly, this was not the first time Celine had stolen a glance in their direction. She had been surprised to note that Bastian appeared well acquainted with every aspect of Mass. He recited things in unflinching Latin, knew when to sit and stand and kneel, bowed his head with the kind of reverence Celine would swear to be genuine. It had taken her off guard, to say the least. She had half expected a bolt of lightning to strike him the moment he dipped his fingers in the basin of holy water beside the entrance.
When tragedy befalls the Lord's flock, we must look to the lessons to be learned. Tragedy is what comes of disobedience,
the Monsignor droned.
As he divulged to us in the Book of Revelation,
Celine closed her eyes, trying to ignore his words, even as fire and brimstone rained down around her.
And we must be thankful for the acts of penance arising from such tragedies. We must offer blessings to the favored sons of our fair city for their boundless generosity and their unswerving attrition,
the elderly man intoned, his hands open at either side of his gold vestment.
Our God is forgiving, so must we be.
Attention in the church shifted toward Bastian, who kept his gaze averted, his head bowed in prayer. It took Celine only a moment to understand. That fiend had paid for his sins today. With boundless generosity, he'd bought the church's absolution. This had to be the reason he'd met with the Monsignor and made a point to attend Mass today. Celine sank back in her pew and crossed her arms, fuming. First, he'd sent his minion attorney to cover his tracks with the Metropolitan Police. Then he'd traded gold for absolution like he would a coin for a loaf of bread. If these weren't the actions of a guilty conscience, Celine would eat her hat and swallow the striped ribbon whole. She glared at the back of Bastian's head. Though she was loath to admit it, she had to admire him for his efficiency. Had to envy how he floated about the world so unscathed. If Celine possessed a tenth of his power, there would be no limit to what she could do.
Celine!
Just beyond the steps leading into the cathedral, Odette waved from her seat in a shining black phaeton, matched with a pair of midnight stallions. Inhaling through her nose, Celine made her way down the steps toward the open-air carriage. She put a hand to her brow to shield herself from the noon sun. Bonjour, Odette, she said reluctantly.
Bonjour, mon ami.
Odette opened her creamy silk parasol with a flourish, the rubies around her ivory cameo winking in the filtered light, her gaze appraising.
I adore how you wear such bright hues. It's ever so much more intriguing than this sea of simpering pastel.
She waved a gloved hand around the square.
One day you must tell me what inspires you.
Celine thought for a moment, her hand still sheltering her from the uncompromising sun. Paris often had the melancholy skies. They were always beautiful, especially in the rain. But I longed for splashes of color, so I thought to wrap myself in them.
Bien sûr, Odette murmured with a knowing smile. Come sit with me.
She patted the blood-red leather beside her.
I shouldn't,
Celine replied, glancing around at what she guessed to be a goodly portion of New Orleans high society, exiting the church on their way to Sunday barbecue.
Ah, would it seem untoward?
Celine wrinkled her nose.
Not untoward. Only indiscreet. Too soon after that unfortunate incident, Odette nodded.
Celine simply smiled.
Well, Odette said, I suppose I can issue my invitation from here.
Invitation?
To join me for dinner at Jacques tonight, you goose. We still have much to discuss with respect to my gown for the masquerade ball. And don't worry, she added, almost as an afterthought.
It won't be near where the incident occurred.
I don't think that's wise. I'm certain the Mother Superior has already granted the request despite her initial misgivings. The Monsignor spoke to her before Mass.
Of course he did, Celine murmured, disbelief flaring through her.
The devil at work once more, no doubt.
Then, as if he'd been summoned by her thoughts, footsteps pounded down the hewn stairs behind her, moving rhythmically, efficiently.
Celine turned in place just as Bastian brushed past her in a suit of dove gray linen, his Panama hat tilted atop his brow, the scent of bergamot and leather unfurling in his wake. He did not pause to acknowledge her, so Celine returned the gesture.
The carriage will come to collect you this evening at 7 o'clock, Odette said, as Bastion settled into the phaeton in a single fluid motion. And don't trouble yourself with respect to your appearance. What you're wearing now is lovely. Without warning, she struck Bastion's arm with the carved handle of her parasol. Don't you think Celine looks lovely?
Bastion pursed his lips and glanced Celine's way.
C'est une belle couleur.
He took hold of the reins, his expression dispassionate. Odette cut her eyes in his direction, then smiled at Celine.
It is indeed a beautiful color, but I wasn't talking about...
The pair of gleaming black horses took off before Odette could finish, their hooves clattering across the cobblestones, scattering any poor soul still milling about the White Cathedral. In the ensuing ruckus, Celine heard Odette screech through the courtyard, her words a jumble of French and Spanish, her outrage aimed at a precise target.
Celine smiled to herself, her features sobering the next instant. She watched the elegant phaeton turn the corner, her back to the church. A moment later, her gaze snagged on the unremitting stare of a familiar figure standing on the opposite end of the steps, studying Celine intently. The Mother Superior frowned, her censure plain, the sun casting half her face in shadow. It did not take the work of a genius to deduce the source of her irritation. Once again, she had been thwarted in her attempts to control Celine, this time by the Monsignor himself. With a huff, the matron of the convent continued down the steps, her posture stoic, her strides unwavering. Sighing to herself, Celine tarried for a while in front of the cathedral until the spired structure emptied of its patrons, and Pippa joined her.
Did the meeting go well? Celine asked Pippa.
Pippa nodded. A warm breeze tugged at her organza skirts.
As well as could be expected. It's the first ladies' organization I've ever joined. Are you certain you don't want to accompany me next time?
I know little about music and art. I'm afraid I wouldn't be able to offer much in the way of conversation.
You know as well as I do that conversing about the arts isn't really the objective.
Celine grinned, a black brow curving up her forehead.
How many of the society dames tried to foist their horrible sons on you?
Pippa paused, her expression grim.
3. One of them might not be
terrible. She turned to Celine, her eyes forlorn.
His name is Phoebus.
Laughter burst from Celine's lips.
I gather he doesn't resemble his namesake, the sun god.
I'm meeting his mother for tea next week, Pippa exhaled in a huff.
After all, we can't remain at the convent forever.
A line formed across the bridge of her nose.
And it's up to us to make the best of our lives.
Celine said nothing in response. With a kind smile, Pippa linked arms with Celine, and they began the short journey back to the convent. As they walked, Celine's thoughts wound through her mind. She shouldn't go tonight. She wouldn't go tonight. Even if it meant foregoing a meal at Jacques. Even if it meant she had to join a few ladies' organizations of her own. Associating herself with any member of Le Coeur de Lyon was a terrible mistake. They were dangerous, beyond the ordinary. Something dark writhed around whatever they touched. It was a fool's folly to consider anything else.
Celine resolved to do what she had come here to do.
begin her life as a proper young woman, find a proper young man, have a passel of proper young children, and that would be the end of it. Celine sighed to herself once more. Her own lies were starting to taste bitter on her tongue. What was it her father liked to say? We must taste the bitter before we can appreciate the sweet. Tonight, Celine supposed, she would do just that.
Ivea, 1872. Cathedral Saint-Louis, Roi de France. New Orleans, Louisiana. You may wonder why I hold so much hate in my heart. As tellers of tales often say, it is a long story. Hundreds of years long, in fact. It begins, as many things do, with a love lost and a trust broken. I could spend hours telling you what I lost, what my kind has suffered, how the plight of the other world has sifted, like grains of sand onto this mortal coil, forever threatening our survival. It is the cause célèbre of our kind, so to speak, as our survival has long been a bone of contention. Once, all creatures of the other world existed beneath the same enchanted sky, through doorways concealed from the realm of man. Those of us who thrived in the light basked in the glittering woodlands of the Sylvan Vale, a place of perpetual springtime, the air forever bathed in the golden warmth of the sun. Those born to darkness took refuge in the sylvan wild, a world of unending night, frosted by wintry stars. But that was before our elders committed their original sin, before the banishment. Now, creatures such as I exist in a place between light and darkness, without a home to call our own, rootless, untethered, alone. For our elders' crimes we were cursed to walk in the shadows of mankind. Soon, as is wont to happen, a rift occurred, dividing our ranks between those of the fallen and those of the Brotherhood. Through the centuries our lore spread around the world. Humanity bestowed on us, on all these immortal night dwellers, many names. Wode, Weir, Dumbair, Moroi, Undead, Revenant, Lycanthrope, Alka, Vardalak, Lamia. The name the locals of New Orleans often use is Vampire, no matter that it is a bit of a misnomer, as not all of us survive solely on the blood of others. To the Brotherhood, the name is an insult. To the Fallen, it is a badge of honor. As with many things, its origins lie in the old world, in a time of perpetual darkness and war, when those in power drank the blood of their foes and impaled the conquered on wooden pikes driven deep into the mud. The title was granted to night dwellers by superstitious codgers, sad beings who believed such demons could be thwarted by cloves of garlic or sprinkles of holy water, by whispered prayers and flashing mirrors, wooden stakes and blessed crosses. Utterly laughable. Nothing contrived by man could ever control such beings. Creatures of the other world have enjoyed propagating such notions, as it keeps our victims enthralled with the belief that their gods can save them. They beings, both light and dark, have always enjoyed toying with the minds of men in such a fashion. There is only one thing that can destroy a vampire, the light of the sun. And there is only one thing that can subdue it, pure silver. But ultimately, these details don't matter. What matters is how I feel now. How those I hold dear have felt for centuries. How we've managed to endure. Even more important is what I plan to do. It is no longer enough to ruin my enemy and dismantle everything he's built over the years. He took me from my family, stole the very breath from my lungs. I will hurt him as he and his kind have hurt me, with a love lost and a trust broken, with justice finally done. Many would say this story is not about justice. It is about vengeance. To me, there is simply no difference. Tonight, I will test my suspicions. I will see if the girl matters, as I've come to suspect. Before dawn breaks, I will know the scars death left on her soul. Words are weapons.
I'm standing at the top of the world!
Ashton Albert, elder son of the shipping magnate J. Ballon Albert, crowed into the deep purple skyline.
And I like what I see. His voice sounded smug in its drunkenness,
despicably self-assured. Bastion hated it, though he sent the arrogant weasel an approving smile as he stared up into a fleece of clouds. Ashton's younger brother Arthur, a shitcan in his own right, elbowed his way onto the steel scaffolding, standing perilously close to the edge for a 17-year-old boy recently conquered by drink.
Make room for me, Ash. I want to see what it feels like to stand on top of the world.
Technically, Phoebus Devereaux, youngest grandson of New Orleans' current mayor, interjected in a nasally monotone.
You're standing on a half-built hotel along the coast of Louisiana. You're nowhere near the top of the world.
Bastion wanted to laugh. Instead, he grimaced. He could swear he had seen Phoebus adjust his spectacles while speaking, like a gazelle who'd limped onto the Serengeti at the exact moment the lions decided to feed. Ash and Art would not be kind to him for his transgression.
Shut your sniveling mouth, you little rat,
Ash yelled over his shoulder.
No one cares what you have to say,
Art echoed, like the good little sycophant he'd been raised to be. Bastian crossed his arms and leaned against a steel column. He took a moment to check his pulse, pressing two fingers of his left hand against the side of his throat. Though he desperately wanted to take these spoiled bastards to task, or at least imagine what it would feel like to do so, he held his tongue and allowed the scene to unfold. Bastian hated this bullshit. That raised the question. Why was he here at all? His lips pushed forward, his eyes panning across the silhouette of New Orleans. Because Sebastian Saint-Germain loved money. In his nearly 19 years, he'd discovered there were only two things he loved more. His family and his city. Money made all manner of grievances disappear. It erased sins and paved pathways into palaces of power and influence. It made what had been impossible, possible. It was the greatest lesson his dead parents had ever taught him. With money, you could buy anything and everything. Even a way to save your own life. It was a shame his parents hadn't learned that lesson in time to spare themselves. Or Emily. Bastian pressed away from the metal column, drawing closer to the edge of the unfinished structure.
So what do you think?
Ash spun around, grabbing hold of a steel cable to maintain his balance.
I think it's precisely the kind of project my father would love. He's been telling us for some time that Marigny is in need of a fine hotel,
Art added.
It's in a perfect location so close to the quarter.
He knows that. Ash spat at his younger brother.
It's why he picked it, you fool.
Why my uncle picked it,
Bastian corrected, keeping his tone mild, good-natured, decidedly un-murderous.
I'll definitely discuss it with him,
Ash said.
It's the perfect project for me to whet my appetite. And put that expensive Princeton education to good use,
Art teased.
Trust me, I've put it to good use. Just ask the whores on the other side of Rampart.
Ash chortled like a drunken hyena. Even the way he laughed made Bastian want to deck him, to stop and watch the blood drip from his nose, to relish what happened next.
The city planning committee might present a problem, however,
Phoebus interjected yet again.
They haven't granted anyone permission to build a hotel this tall in forever.
Art shoved Phoebus in the arm, the slider boy stumbling into a steel column.
Who gives a rat's ass about them?
You and your brother seem to have a disturbing fixation with rodents,
Bastian replied.
And you're not wrong, Phoebus. I was hoping to consult with you about that.
He shifted alongside the boy, careful to keep his posture light. Unthreatening. A feat in itself, as he stood nearly half a head taller than the youngest Devereaux.
Your opinion on how to go about this would be much appreciated.
Bastian didn't need his opinion. He needed a member of the politically connected Devereaux family in his pocket. Phoebus was as good a mark as any. He'd recently returned from a stint at Oxford, and rumor had it his mother had grand plans for him in the way of a political future. Politics was the next great frontier. Bastian patted Phoebus on the shoulder as if they were old chums. Shrewd business was about identifying an opponent's fatal flaw and exploiting it.
You'd be of great help to me in this matter. I'd appreciate it immensely.
Phoebus swallowed, his brown eyes bright behind the rims of his spectacles, betraying how flattered he was to have garnered Bastian's notice.
I'll look into it.
Good man.
Bastian struck his shoulder again, this time a little too hard. He needed Phoebus to stand up straighter, speak with conviction. If he did, he would be a force to be reckoned with one day. Worth at least 4 of Art and 8 of Ash. Art tugged a leather-wrapped flask from inside his frock coat pocket. He took a long swig and passed it to his elder brother.
I don't know if the Sun God is gonna be any help to you on this, Bastion.
He's too busy scaring away all the wenches his mother keeps tossing his way.
Now she's even trying to recruit from the dregs at the Ursuline Convent.
Ash guffawed again. Bastion gritted his teeth and checked his pulse a second time. A wicked light flashed in Art's eyes.
I heard there are a few choice morsels among the latest arrivals.
Ash laughed even louder, the scent of stale liquor spoiling the balmy night air.
Maybe I should have a look.
He sneered at Phoebus.
Would you even know what to do with a honeypot, Devereaux?
Rage swirled in Bastion's fists, a bloodlust longing to be slaked. He needed to mind his temper. It had often been his undoing as a boy. It had cost Bastion the thing his uncle had desired most for him, an education at West Point, and all that it entailed. Now Uncle Nico insisted he marry well to remedy the loss, a prospect Bastion despised. The tittering debutantes of New Orleans, as well as their meddling mothers, wearied him past the point of reason, a fact that amused his uncle a great deal.
Being bored by them is far better than being enamored, Uncle Nico would say. Never fall in love with a mortal, for love is an affliction. It always ends in blood.
He'd warned countless times, in countless tongues. Anger had also cost Bastion his sister, a young woman with a fiery temper and a ferocious heart. A lump gathered in his throat, as it always had for more than a decade. He swallowed it the next instant, disdaining any sign of weakness, any chance for an opponent to best him. Though Bastion fought it, his thoughts drifted, unbidden, to another young woman with a fierce soul, to her unflinching nerve and rapier wit, to the darkness that lingered in her gaze, to hair that glistened like a raven's wing and eyes the color of envy. Bastion wanted to slide his fingers into that hair, loosen it from its bonds, let it cascade around her shoulders in a waterfall of black ink. Pause to grip the silken strands before savoring the salt on her skin. Love is an affliction. Frustration heated through Bastion's veins. He had no time for such nonsense, despite what Odette had to say. Managing his uncle's affairs consumed most of Bastion's waking hours. Following General Lee's surrender at Appomattox 7 years ago, Nicodemus Saint-Germain had begun buying land in port cities throughout the South, with a plan to one day own the largest collection of luxury hotels in the country. Most of the year, Uncle Nico traveled between his holdings in New York and Charleston, leaving control of their New Orleans operation largely to Bastion. As such, there was always someone who needed something, be it a word in the right person's ear, or an intervening handful of coin. Countless decisions to be made at the drop of a hat. Céline Rousseau was an unwelcome distraction. She brought with her nothing but trouble, as she had proved several days ago during Michael's interrogation at the convent, when she had attempted to bait them both. A silly attempt that, by all rights, should have failed. Alas, it did not. It was as if she held Bastion by a spell, even at a distance. As if he had been told not to think of the color red. Now all he saw were its vibrant hues, in the sunrise and the sunset, in every trembling flower, in the splash of wine into a crystal glass. It always ends in blood. Bastion already had too much to lose. This beguiling girl, with a sense of humor to match his own and a story begging to be told, would not be yet another casualty. Not if he could help it.
I'll be sure to speak with my father about this tomorrow, Ash said, with a toothsome grin.
Bastian countered with an equally obnoxious smile.
Excellent. Then I suggest we return to Terra Firma and grab ourselves a plate of the best saumonier in the city, along with a chilled bottle of Chateau du Kim.
Art howled into the sky while clomping drunkenly toward the suspended platform system positioned alongside the structure, Phoebus trailing in his footsteps. Ash lingered behind for a second.
The only thing is...
He pulled Bastian closer by gripping his forearm, an action that sent the ball of latent anger from Bastian's chest into his throat.
I know my father isn't going to cotton to some of your... associates.
A cool wash of surprise unfurled down Bastion's spine. Either Ash was far more reckless than Bastian had first surmised, or he was a complete fool. Neither boded well for the bastard. Nevertheless, they had reached a critical juncture in their conversation. A decision needed to be made. Bastian knew what Ash meant. He simply wanted to hear him say it. So, he raised a brow in question.
Come off it, Bastian. You know of what I speak, Ash continued.
Bastian widened his smile. It appeared his bloodlust might be slaked tonight after all.
I haven't the faintest clue which of my associates troubles your father. You'll have to be more specific.
His voice had gone quieter with each word, until the last was no more than a whisper.
A man like J. Balin Albert can't be seen doing business with Chinamen and
It took less than a second for Bastian to draw his revolver from beneath his frock coat. He leveled it before Ash could take another breath. Slow to react, Ash remained stock still, his mouth agape, his eyes blinking sluggishly. Behind them, Art stumbled to his brother's aid, only to be knocked from his boots by something he neither saw nor heard. A ghost in the wind. To his credit, Phoebus knew better than to interfere or so much as utter a whimper. Indistinct shapes melted from the lines and shadows of the skeletal building, moving too quickly to track. They scuttled down steel columns soundlessly, blurring through the darkness until they sharpened into focus, forming a circle of cloaked figures around Bastian and Ash.
What the devil?
Ash's voice shook. Bastian stared him down, a smile of supreme pleasure taking shape across his face.
Allow me to introduce you to some of my associates, Ash.
He aimed the revolver at the shocked boy's chest.
They'd like a word with you.
Before the night was through, Ashton Albert was going to piss his pants. Bastian wouldn't relish the sight. Or the smell. No, that was a lie. He'd relish the sight immensely. It was time for this insufferable creature to be laid low. To know what it felt like to have nothing. Not even a mother or a father nearby to save their son from the demons lurking in the darkness. Tension raked across Bastian's shoulders. With a subtle twist of his neck, he forced his muscles to relax. It had been almost a year since unremitting anger had taken hold of Bastian when he thought of his parents' untimely demise. Of all things, he wished it wasn't a whimpering Ashton Albert to serve as a reminder of what he'd lost. Yet another reason to relish this weasel's comeuppance. It was just as well. Bastian supposed he could make do with the sight of J. Balin Albert's elder son dangling horizontally over a metal platform 8 stories above New Orleans. A burst of feminine laughter barreled into the night. Hortense took hold of Ash's polished boots and spun the boy around once more, the uncut jewels in her massive rings flashing through the darkness, her ebon skin radiant against the velvet sky. When the pulley suspending Ash above the platform creaked, he cried out, begging for reprieve.
Dis le plus fort, mon cher, Hortense cooed.
I can't hear you.
Boone laughed heartily, his cherubic features filled with delight. At the building's edge, Jay twirled his mother-of-pearl dagger between his fingertips, his black hair coiling in the breeze.
Hortense's sister, Madeline, rolled her eyes.
Near the hem of her cloak, stricken silent by fear, sat Art, who proceeded to vomit on the platform a second time, his chest heaving, his face soiled by snot and tears.
Well, what do you want?
Ash wailed. Bastian intended to answer him, eventually.
Oi, Bastian,
Nigel said, his Cockney accent gruff, his expression severe.
Don't descend to this level, Gov. Some becoming of an honorable leader.
Bastian snorted.
Which fool said I was honorable? Depravity has no bounds.
Amen to that,
Boone interjected in an exaggerated drawl. Grunting, Nigel adjusted the ties of his cloak.
It's enough.
He sliced a hand through the air. Arjun shifted closer, his lips wrapped around a smoldering cheroot, his expression one of shared agreement. Bastian studied them in amused silence. Like Odette and Jay, Nigel Fitzroy had been at his side from the beginning, Boone, Hortense, and Madeline following soon thereafter. Arjun Desai had arrived to New Orleans less than a year ago, but he'd joined their ranks quickly, becoming much more than a mere colleague or acquaintance. Bastian prized the counsel of these seven strange individuals above most things, though he would only admit it under extreme duress. Thumbscrews, boiling oil and the like.
I really should find some new friends, Bastian mused.
Arjun exhaled a plume of blue-gray smoke.
If you can afford it.
His hazel eyes glittered with amusement.
Spoken like the bloody Maharaja himself, Nigel guffawed.
Annoyance flashed across Arjun's face. In many of your beloved crown circles, a Maharaja is no better than a mongrel.
I would never. Dogs and Indians not allowed, Master Fitzroy, right at the entrance to your beloved Astoria.
Anger darkened Nigel's features.
If it had been left to me, none of that tosh would have happened. I know better, just as I know my betters.
A benevolent imperialist,
Arjun said around another cloud of smoke. How refreshing. A feeble cry cut through the night, returning their attention to the matter at hand. Bastian gripped Ash by the rope around his waist, bringing an end to the slow torment of spinning in a circle.
I'm telling you this because I suspect you didn't know, he began in a conversational tone. My mother was a quadroon, a free woman of color.
Those associates your father couldn't be seen working alongside?
They are me. They are my family.
He paused, dropping his voice to a whisper.
No one insults my family.
I didn't intend to— Shut your mouth, you miserable swine,
Boone interrupted.
God is speaking.
Bastian silenced him with a look, then turned back to Ash.
Such a shame. I was going to share a bottle of wine with you,
Ashton.
Now,
you'll have to partake in a meal with those who prefer a very different kind of drink.
When Bastian finished speaking, the tension in the air pulled taut like a string about to snap. Ash blinked away his tears, forcing himself to focus. Whatever he saw in the faces around him caused his lips to quiver and his shoulders to shake. Bastian knew what he saw, what Art saw, what Phoebus had hidden from in the precious moments prior. Demons. Creatures of blood and darkness. Death. Made flesh. Bastian's family. For better or for worse.
Art heaved again beside Madeline's feet, choking as he struggled to calm himself. Bastian glanced at Arjun, sharing a wordless conversation. The next instant, Arjun reached for Art's wrist. The boy slumped forward a moment later, granted a blessed pardon. Tears streamed sideways down Ash's face.
All I said was...
Bastian stepped back, cocked his revolver, took aim.
Please!
Ash begged. A suspicious stain darkened the front of his trousers, the acrid smell of urine suffusing about him.
I'll give you whatever you want. I won't say anything. I'll forget this ever.
No, Bastian said.
Never forget this as long as you live.
Words are weapons.
And nothing else matters when the devil has you by the balls.
He fired a single shot. Ash screamed. The rope dangling him above the platform snapped, his bound body crashing against the metal with a resounding clang. When he rolled over, blood dripped from his nose. It sent curling into the air. Warm copper mixed with the salt of the sea. Hortense and Madeline stopped moving, stopped breathing. Jay sheathed one of his blades with a snick. Boone threw his head back, inhaling deeply, his eyelids squeezed shut. Frowning, with obvious frustration, Nigel crossed his arms while Arjun ground out his cheroot beneath his heel. Bitter amusement wound through Bastian's chest. Another wish, granted. Today might be his lucky day. Ash fought against his bindings as the cloaked figures around him drew closer, their eyes silver coins beneath a crescent moon. Then Madeline, Hortense, and Boone fell on Ash like whips cracking through the night, his cries of terror muffled by the heavy fabric of their cloaks. By the sounds of ecstasy rising into the air high above New Orleans. Nigel watched the frenzy in cutting silence, his long arms crossed, the judgment on his face plain.
You're better than petty revenge, Bastian. Your uncle wouldn't be pleased.
I never claimed to be a saint, Bastian replied, his expression cool. And Nicodemus isn't here tonight, is he?
Go, Mamgie,
Jay muttered in gratitude, before wandering back toward the edge of the unfinished building, twirling a butterfly knife around his fingers with insouciant ease.
A fine shot, Arjun interjected, deftly changing the subject.
Severing a rope with a single bullet, bravo.
Bastian said nothing, his eyes tightening around the edges.
What?
Arjun blinked.
Was it something I said?
He swayed unsteadily on his feet.
You're weak.
It happens. It took a lot of effort to subdue the brother. Unlike you, I'm not God, he joked.
A dark smile ghosted across Bastian's lips.
See to it you have something to eat.
But of course, old chap.
Arjun bowed with a flourish. Despite his best efforts, guilt kindled in Bastian's chest, threatening to catch flame. He battled the feeling, refusing to be troubled by their judgment. Then he called for Madeline, who blurred to his side with the stealth of a shadow, her cloak trailing behind her like smoke. Not a trace of blood could be seen anywhere, until she opened her mouth, showing white teeth stained crimson and canines as long as those of a wolf.
Make sure no one dies tonight, Mad, Bastian said softly. We have too many eyes on us as it is.
Mais oui, Bastian.
Madeline nodded, her features serene.
And what should we do with him when we are done?
Leave the trash with his younger brother in the alley near their favorite watering hole.
See to it they remember nothing. As always, my trust is with you.
Madeline nodded, then whirled back to resume her meal. Exhaling slowly, Bastian glanced about the open space until his gaze settled on what he'd been searching for. Phoebus Devereaux,
huddled in a corner, his knees pulled to his chest, undoubtedly praying he'd been forgotten for the first time in his life. When Phoebus caught sight of Bastion gliding his way, he wrapped his arms around his knees, clasping his hands together until his knuckles turned white. Making a point to move with care, Bastion crouched in front of Phoebus.
I'm genuinely sorry you had to see any of that.
What are you going to do to me?
Phoebus trembled like a dying leaf in a breeze.
That depends,
Bastion said.
On what you want me to do.
I don't understand.
I can't simply let you go.
You could?
Phoebus's eyes went wide behind his smudged spectacles.
If you wished it.
Phoebus nodded.
You don't have to worry. I won't say anything, Bastion.
I know you won't.
A half-smile curved up Bastion's face.
Who would believe you?
Sympathy laced through his features.
Just another tantalizing story about the court, which I've found to be far more helpful than hurtful, for reasons I'm certain you can understand.
Shuddering, Phoebus looked away.
Conversely, I can help you forget.
Bastion paused.
I can make it so the events of tonight never haunt your dreams.
Phoebus swallowed.
Are you going to kill Art and Ash?
No. They won't remember anything either.
His expression hardened.
But they don't have a choice. You do. I never take away the choice from someone I respect.
You respect me?
Phoebus's voice was hoarse.
You're a good man. See to it you stay that way.
Bastion unfurled to his feet with the grace of a jungle cat.
And make your decision.
Phoebus pushed his spectacles up the bridge of his nose, his fingers trembling. Conviction settled across his sweating face.
I want to forget.
And so you shall.
High above the Crescent City, the youngest grandson of the mayor began to scream bloody murder into a sky bruised with clouds. Champagne and Roses. Celine leaned back into the jewel-toned damask of her gilded chair. I have nothing.
Nothing?
Odette laughed. She reached for another morsel of quail, pulling the tender meat apart between her delicate fingers.
There is nothing I can say, Celine continued. Nothing I can do.
No way to convey how amazing this meal was.
Simply beyond belief.
She let out a protracted sigh.
Perhaps if I could dance like a winged fairy, I could better serve this cause.
Another bout of laughter lilted into the air.
That is my favorite thing you've ever said, mon ami.
Also the truest. Celine breathed in deeply, then reached beyond her golden cutlery for the crystal stem of her wine glass. Celine had spent most of her 17 years in Paris. As such, she'd lived a stone's throw from some of the finest culinary establishments in the world. Unfortunately, the cost of frequenting these establishments had been too much for her family. Far too out of reach for most people she knew. But, on special occasions, her father would take her to a bistro around the corner from their flat. The shiny-faced cook helming the kitchen was famous for her decadent roast chicken, served with small golden potatoes bathed in duck fat for hours on end. As a child, Celine loved popping a perfectly round pomme de terre into her mouth when it was still too hot, the crispy skin crackling on her tongue as she blew around the potato, struggling to cool it and consume it all at once. Her father had scolded her for being so unladylike, though he'd fought to conceal his smile. It had been Celine's favorite meal. Every year on her birthday, her father would bring home a single millefeuille from a well-known bakery in the 8th arrondissement. A cake of 1,000 leaves.
paper-thin layers of puff pastry separated by whipped crème pâtissière, crushed almonds, and thin dribbles of chocolate. These were some of Celine's fondest memories. Despite her father's sternness and austerity, he'd managed to show his love in simple ways. Ways she had often brought to mind during some of her darkest moments on the transatlantic crossing, for they had given her comfort when she most needed it. But they were all pale shadows when compared with tonight. Tonight, at 17, Celine was certain she had consumed the best meal of her life. Langoustines poached in butter, white wine, and thyme. Pistachio-encrusted turbot, garnished with flakes of white truffle. Roasted quail served with a crème d'olive, alongside root vegetables sautéed in herbes de Provence, then topped with edible flowers. Not to mention the little delicacies and perfect wine pairings offered throughout. All of it, sublime to the last drop. The fanciful side of Celine dreamed of one day bringing her father here. Of sharing this meal with him, too. Odette dabbed at the corners of her lips with a silk napkin before gesturing to one of the waiting maîtres d'hôtel, who set a large brass bowl filled with rose petals beside her on a marble pedestal. Then he filled the basin with bubbling champagne so Odette could rinse her hands. So indulgent. So wasteful. Once her fingers were clean, Odette smoothed her bodice of Duchess satin, her thumb grazing the ivory cameo at her breast, tilting it askew. "You wear that brooch often. It must hold a great deal of meaning to you," Celine commented, while the maître d'hôtel poured an entirely new bottle of champagne and roses. The bubbles tickled her wrists, the heady perfume of the petals curling into her throat. "Hmm," Odette hummed in reply. "It does indeed." She straightened the cameo, her gestures careful. A mischievous gleam shone in her eyes. "Would you believe me if I told you it was enchanted? That it kept the most shadowy of my secrets safe?" She winked. "After this much food and wine, I would believe just about anything." Celine groaned as she tried in vain to slouch in her chair. "Tell me, Odette, why must we wear corsets even while we eat?"
"Because men enjoy keeping us in cages at every waking hour." Odette swirled her wine. "That way we are contained. They're afraid of what would happen if we were free."
She grinned.
"But perhaps if I looked as you did in a corset, I would be singing a different tune." "Alas, we can't all be blessed with a tiny waist and a naturally heaving bosom," she teased.
"It isn't as wonderful as you would expect,"
Celine winced, the wine causing her thoughts to spin. "Ever since my 12th birthday, I've dreaded the way men look at me, as if I were something to eat."
Odette canted her head, an odd light in her gaze.
"I never thought of it that way."
She paused in consideration.
"Forgive me for speaking out of turn."
Conviction flashed across her face.
"C'est assez! None of us should have to wear corsets unless we decide to wear them. In the meantime, I say we take to the square and burn them all."
Celine's eyes sparkled.
"The corsets? No, the men, of course." A peal of laughter burst from Celine's lips.
"You do talk scandalously. I merely speak the truth. Men are wretched, my dear. I've sworn off them entirely. I'll keep them as friends, but they remain forever unwelcome in my heart."
Delight flared in Celine's chest.
"Please share your secret with me. I wish to be rid of them as well."
She could think of one or two in particular.
"It isn't a secret."
Odette pushed aside her plate of Limoges porcelain to rest her elbows along the scalloped table's edge.
"I simply have no interest in them."
She paused, her expression thoughtful.
In truth, I much prefer the company of women in all respects. Odette pronounced this plainly, watching for Celine's reaction. It took Celine a moment to comprehend the full meaning behind Odette's admission. Her eyes went wide the next instant, color creeping up her neck. Please, know how flattered I am, but... Odette snorted. I don't mean you specifically, you delicious narcissist. Though you are genuinely beautiful, and would undoubtedly prove to be a genuine nuisance as a result. Years ago, I swore never to love anything more beautiful than myself. She heaved a dramatic sigh. Thankfully, that leaves my options wide and varied. Laughter caught in Celine's throat just as she took a sip of wine. It burned at the back of her tongue, causing her to cough like a silly young woman in her cups.